So we have one word left on Chavav Amid Beis. The last word on the page, Itmar. So what we discussed yesterday was the issue of Hachraza, and we came to the conclusion that Psulei Eidus Darabanan are fundamentally different than Psulei Eidus Doraisa. In the case of Psulei Eidus Agazlan, for example, an outright Gazlan, he's Psulei Eidus from the moment of the Gzela. It could take a while until Bezin finds out about it. We may need evidence, but Lemafreya, from the point of his Gzela, from that moment and on, he's a Rasha and he's Psul. So, for example, let's say he stole on Sunday. Bezdin only found out about it on Tuesday when the Eidim came into Bezdin, but on Monday, this same Gazlan, who had stolen the day before, had signed on a shtar. That shtar is Psul. However, in the case of Psulei Eidus Derabanan, for example, you have the case of Masachi Bekuvia, Mavl Veribis, Mafri Yucheyonim, we have the Gabai, we have the Roa. In all these cases, the shtar that he signed on Monday is a kosher shtar. We can rely on that even though on Sunday he had already taken a loan Beribis. And the reason is because we require Hachrozen, and only on Tuesday, when the evidence came before Bezdin, that on Sunday he had violated the Isur of Ribis, only on that day, Tuesday, did they make a Hachraza. And the Gemara explains that the reason why Psulei Eidus Rabbanan require Hachraza is because of Pseidel Lekuchas. So people don't know that this person is Psul. They're going to have him sign, invite him to sign in a shtar. They're going to take a tremendous financial loss because in their naivete, they thought he was a kosher aid. Little did they know that he was Psul. So therefore, the Rabbanan said, let's wait till Hachraza. And Rashi, as we pointed out yesterday, Dibra Maschil Hachrozah Bebezdin, Rashi says, Einam Nifsolim Li'edus Ashi Achrizu Bebezdin Lo Diap Sulon. Rashi's outspoken that they're not considered Psul until the Hachrozah takes place. Now, there's a whole issue here which we touched upon yesterday in the Iyun Shir with Rishonim, the Nebuki Yosef and others. What happens if this testimony on Monday that he gave had nothing to do with any sort of Hefseid Mama? No one's going to lose anything. Let's say, for example, on Sunday he was Slova Beribis. The Achrozah is going to take place on Tuesday. But on Monday he testified in what's called Iser Veheter, which means there was no relevance to Mama. Exactly what that case would be, I don't know, because almost every case of Isur Vehet is relevant to Mamon. But let's say, for example, he would paskin on Tumah V'Tara. That's called Isurim. Let's say he would paskin a face on a Mara that she's Tmeya. Now, yesterday, he was already Lova Beribis. So the seeds were sown for his Psul. And therefore, he should be disqualified. But we're waiting for Achrozah. But again, the reason why we're postponing his Psul in Hachrozis, Lodia, we want to know that everybody has access to this information, and they'll only have access to this information after Hachroza. And in the meantime, since they didn't hear the Hachroza, and they were not notified that this fellow is disqualified, they had him sign on a shtar. Okay, but here he didn't sign on a shtar. He testified on Tumah V'Tara, on Isur Veheter. So the Muki Yosef says that in such a case, we rely on his Eidus. I'm sorry, the other way around. Says the Muki Yosef, in such a case, he's Psulei Eidus. We have to disqualify his testimony. Again, the only reason we're postponing his Psul, and we're going to accept and qualify his Eidus of Monday, is because of Pseidon the Lekuchos, because of people who might lose money, because they naively assumed that he was kosher Eidus. They had him signed in a shtar. So imagine, you're a malva. There's a massive sum of money involved in this shtar. And you're going to lose your money because you didn't know that he was Psul. And you had him signed on the shtar. The shtar is worth. So the Chachamim made a takana that we're going to wait until Hachrozah. And only from that moment and on will we declare his Psul. But really, says the Muki Yosef, he should be possible from the time of his Avera, which means he was Lova Beribis, so he was Masachik Bekuvia, and that took place on Sunday. So the Muki Yosef has like a Tzvei Dinim here, the two Dinim. Is he possible Yedus or is he not possible Yedus? And according to the Muki Yosef, it depends. If you're talking about Yedus Mamon, then we're going to be Machshir his Yedus. We're going to consider it a reliable Yedus. Why? Because there was no Achrazah. But if it's Eidus in Isur, where there's no implication as far as Mammon is concerned, then he's possibly Eidus from the moment of Salva Beribis. An amazing Chiddush in the Muki Yosef. And it makes logical sense that the Takana should be understood in the context of the motivation for the Takana, the reason for the Takana. Now, many Rishonim disagree with the Muki Yosef. They say well, once the Takana was made, he's not possible until the Achrazah. It doesn't matter what kind of Eidus. But the Muki Yosef wants to go into the nitty-gritty details, and let's check out this Eidus of Monday, and let's see to what it was relevant. It was relevant to someone's mama, and then we're going to institute this Takana, an enactment, and we're going to postpone his psul until Achrazah. But if it's not relevant to mama, then he's possibly Eidus. You see one thing clearly from the Muki Yosef, that he held that we cannot rely on the testimony of a person who violates these Isurim. Again, initially in history, if you go back long enough, the Chachamim weren't so nervous about this. You know, people made excuses, it was only occasional, but once it became a widespread behavior pattern or misbehavior pattern, the Chachamim got up, they made a takana, and they said he's possible. But he's only possible from the Shas HaKrosa. Says the Muki Yosef, no, that's not what the Rabbanu was saying. He's possible from the moment that he borrowed Beribis. Narvaz, in order to protect the Lekuchos, we're gonna rely on the Eidus of someone who's possible. That's the Muki Yosef. It's an amazing Chiddush. And they're showing him like feel intuitively that it doesn't make any sense. First, it doesn't make any sense to say he's possible and yet we're going to rely on his Eidus. Right, that doesn't make any sense. The other option is much more attractive, the position that he's not possible Eidus, because we have to make him into a possible Eidus. So how do we convert him into an Eid possible? Only through Achrazah. That's going to be a decision of Bezdin. And the procedure of Achrazah is absolutely critical in order to make him into an Eid Possel. That's how the other Rishonim are going to learn it. And they're not going to accept some sort of splintering of this Takana, you know, split it and bifurcate it. You know, they're not going to say, well, it depends what kind of testimony he gave on Monday. You know, we don't make these distinctions. And this is what I've told you a million and one times, and I repeat myself again. There's a difference between Sibas HaTakana and Geder HaTakana. Very often, the reason and the motivation for a Takana Chachamim is X, but the way that they formulate it is Y that goes way beyond X. You could call it, if you like, Lo Plug, but I don't think Lo Plug does justice to it. It's much more profound than Lo Plug. It has to do with creating a legal system that is consistent, that defines and categorizes and classifies. We classify this person as an Eid Kosher, according to all the Rishonim. And we accept his Eidus, even in cases where there was no reason to do so. Even if we should really hold that he's possible, because no one's going to lose anything by it. In this case, the scenario of Isa Veheter, there's no Pseidel Lekuchas, but no, Chachamim said he is an Eid Kosher. We're going to postpone his psul until that procedural makav patish, as I call it, of hachraza. Okay, that's as far as the sugya that we dealt with yesterday of hachraza. Then we had a discussion about horas heter. I think I wrote it on the back, but oh, nobody erased it yet. Horas heter. This way Rashi explains the sugya of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman has a whole discussion about a sharecropper who justifies taking a little extra here off the top, you know, skims off the top during certain months of the year when he works overtime. You know, it's like the actuary in tax season. I have a friend who's an actuary. You can't go near him during certain months of the year. I mean, he's so busy. And because the sharecropper feels that he put in all this extra work, and now the owner of the field is getting that much more profit from because of his work, he justifies taking a little extra. He dips into the tip box. You know, there's in some restaurants you'll see a tip box, so he takes an extra tip. And in such a case, Rav Nachman says, because he justifies his actions, he's not an outright gozlan. He's not chashed to be so immoral that he would perjure himself in a testimony in a bezdin. Other Rishonim have a different take on the sugya Rav Nachman, and they claim it's the Rambam Shita that it's not kpeda, that in certain cases when it's X, Y, and Z, it's an aris, and it's a dover muat, and it's a dover shidigmar malachto. Again, the Rambam doesn't have that gears in Igmar Malachto, but under certain circumstances, you can assume that the Baal HaBayis is not makpid, which means from the get-go, there was no issue of gzela over here. And then we had a story about the Chevra Kadisha. And it's not clear exactly what motivated the Chevra Kadisha, but apparently they would bury the dead even on Yontif Rishon. Now, we have a certain halacha called Yontif Sheni, and the halacha bends backwards, this is Sugi Masechta Rosh Hashanah, for Kvura, for the very urgent mitzvah of Kvura, which is Kavod HaMes, so that we're going to allow burying the dead on Yontif Sheni, but we would never allow burying the dead on Yontif Rishon, because that would be a violation of a lav d'oraisa. At least Yontif Sheni is only d'rabbanan. Not only is it only d'rabbanan, I'm afraid to say this publicly, but it's only mishum minhag, and the reason why I'm afraid to say it publicly, dok v'tishkach, we'll have to erase it from the tape recorder, because today the conservatives and others are trying to be makil with Yontif Sheni Shel Golis. They don't want to get rid of Yontif Sheni Shel Golis. Maybe they did already. I don't know. I'm not up to, on the latest. I don't know if they met a convention and they decided.
I think they got rid of Yontif also.
Oh, Yontif Rishon as well. Well, here we're saying that only the Chevra Kadisha got rid of Yontif Rishon.
Yontif Sheni got rid of him.
What did he say? So Yontif Sheni, they would makil. But Lamaisa, we don't even rely on that kula of Yontif Sheni and Chutzah. It's the only kula that I've seen, and I actually once witnessed this, is on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. And there was Nebuchad tragedy in Har Nof, and they actually buried this young person on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. But again, don't paskin, but these are very severe issues, and they're back and forth. So what Rav Papa wanted to do is he wanted to give a whammy to prevent this from being a widespread pattern, and he wanted to put the Chevra Kadisha members into Nidui. And Rav Huna disagreed. Rav Huna says that Nidui is something that's appropriate for a Rasha who is absolutely deliberate. You know, he wants to gain Mammon, and for the sake of Mammon, he'll sell him anything. You know, he'll even falsify his testimony. But in this case, at least if you look at the mindset of the Chevra Kadisha, they thought they were doing a great mitzvah. So a papa responded and he said, what do you mean they thought? Who are you fooling? I mean, we put these guys into Nidui. They didn't get the message. And the Gemara answers, Kapara ka avdi lu rabbana, that they came up with a justification. They said the Rabbana were motivated to give us an availability of Kapara, and therefore they put us into Nidui. You see very... Now let me just point out, there's a whole, you know, series of logical equations over here. Nidui equals avelus. What do I mean? Almost all the dinim of avelus, in fact, I think it's all the dinim, maybe there's one exception, all of them apply to nidui. And the reason for that is what the Ramban is famous for calling nivul. Are you familiar with that word nivul? I'm going to write this on the board because it's a very important word. And it's a... it's an invention of the Ramban, nivul. Now, I'm not sure exactly, you'll help me out here with the English, what would be the translation of nivul, but nivul basically means when you look awful, meaning you let your hair grow, and your beard grow, and you don't take this, you don't wash yourself.
Unkempt, disheveled.
Disheveled, but I'm looking for an even stronger...
Disheveled.
Now I'm looking for even a stronger word in English. You know, if you have a thesaurus, look up disheveled and see if there's a stronger word.
I mean, grungy is a slightly.
Grungy, okay. We used to call them, again, maybe this is not nice to say, the hobos, you know, the homeless people that they sleep in the streets and they don't take care of themselves and they, pardon the expression, they smell. And that's called nivul. And the Ramban sees that the Halach actually recognizes situations in which nivul is acceptable. Because nivul means that I totally disregard my own physical body. Because now I'm in a state of depression, I'm in a state of mourning and grief. And that grief means that life and physical life is just nauseating. And that's what happens in the face of death. When Nebuch, you lose a close relative, then there's nivul. Nivul means I don't take care of myself. Today, we don't have exactly the nivul that they had. They had something called Atifas HaRosh and Kfiyas HaMita, which we don't have, but we do cover the mirrors. And that minug is really a reflection of this concept of the Ramban, of nivul. The last thing I want to do during my velus is to look at myself in the mirror and, you know, oh, I'm a good-looking guy. That's antithetical to velus. This physical world of ours is completely negated. It's total negation. That's called nivul. And the Rav used to always talk about the almana of the president who was killed in my youth. Maybe some of you remember that you know who I'm referring to. One of the most important families in American history. You know, from the bourgeois, you know, from the nouvelle riche, you know, those families that everybody talks about. That family has had so many tragedies, it's unbelievable. And she beautied herself for the funeral. You know, she was the president's wife, she had to be all, she bought herself a new this. That's antithetical to Halach. Avelus is nivul. It's not, you know, you buy yourself a new outfit. So that's the Jewish philosophy of nivul. And this applies in another context called nidui. Nidui means when we say to a person, you are set aside from society. To some extent, you have no physical presence in society, and your physicality is totally negated, and that's also nivul. And the Rav Zichron Levroch used to always say that avelus is a kiyum of tshuva. That when a person accepts upon himself the divine decree of death that unfortunately visited one of the members of his family, at that point he has to go through a process of tshuva. In general, whenever a person suffers, yisurin is mechayev tshuva. So part of the tshuva process is to, in a sense, self-humiliate myself. Busha, humiliation, is an integral, essential part of the tshuva process. And if I negate myself through nivul, that's on the way of tshuva. So the Chevra Kaddisha here sensed that although they were motivated by mitzvah, Chazal still said that you need tshuva. And we're going to afford you a mitzvah framework called Nidui of Nivul, through which you'll achieve tshuva and kapara. Now, if we had time, and this would be an interesting research project, we would look through Shas and see cases where a person was involved in a mitzvah and yet he needs tshuva. He has to do tshuva for a mitzvah. And the reason for that is that sometimes a mitzvah overrides a lotasa, but at the end of the day, you are violating a lotasa. Yesterday I gave an example from Shatnis, but there are many examples throughout Shas where the paradoxical situation is that I'm involved in a mitzvah, and yet I need tshuva, I need kapara. Hashem put me in a situation where I had to override the Torah, and I did it for the sake of a mitzvah, I was allowed to do so, but yet the sin is still a sin. The avera is still an avera, and has an impact on the soul. So for example, again, we don't have time for this, the machlokas Rambam and Raivin, in a case of a chole, and he has to eat non-kosher food, does he make a bracha on it? So on the one end, you could say, well, he's allowed to eat this food. He's in a situation of pikuach nefesh. Nay, he's obligated to eat the food. And when he eats the food, he's mekayim a mitzvah in pikuach nefesh. V'chayim v'hem v'lo sheyomus v'hem. But nevertheless, he's still eating that food. And that food is despicable. So Hashem put him into a situation where paradoxically he's involved in a mitzvah, and yet his hands are somewhat soiled and contaminated. He needs kapar. Oh, Itmar. Now we start the new sugya. We have to turn to Daf Chav Zayin. And I'll just tell you by introduction, one of the most famous dafim in all of Masechtas Sanhedrin is Chav Zayin. So hopefully by Purim we'll finish Daf Chav Zayin. We've been discussing until now whether an aid who is posel is posel l'mafreya, meaning from the time on Sunday, as we said, that he violated the Isur of Gzela d'Rabbanon, or do we postpone his psul until Bezdin declares him as a posel, which means hachrozah. We have a similar issue with regard to an aid zome. So let's just simply, you know, I'm going to assume you know nothing, just for the sake of saying the shia. That's the way I think you should say shia. You should assume that people know nothing. Well, let's talk about Edim Zomim. There are two ways in which we can disqualify Edim in a Bezdin. In other words, two witnesses that have all the credentials of being Ksherim, and we can disqualify their Edus. One is called Hakchasha, and the other is called Hazama. Right? Hakchasha and Hazam. And these are fundamentally different, not only in the way that you, the method by which you disprove the first pair of Edim, but also by the repercussions thereof. In a case of Hakchasha, after two Edim testify that Reuven killed Shimon, two Edim come in, and they say Reuven did not kill Shimon. We were there at the scene of the crime. On that day, we know that Reuven did not kill Shimon. That's called Hakchasha. Now, another phrase in Chazal, which is synonymous with Hakchasha, is called Treyu Trey. Treyu Trey means a stalemate. Beis Din throws up their arms into the air and they say, we don't know. We have two Edim, Reuven and Shimon. We have Levi and Yehuda. They're all good guys as far as we know, but one of them, one of these two pairs, is lying. But we don't know who's lying. So in such a case, we just throw it all out. And that means that we're going to disqualify here. I don't want you to ruin your Gemara here. We're going to disqualify the first pair of Edim. Well, let me say that better, because I'm getting a little bit too close to Hazama. We're going to disqualify the first Edus. And we can't rely on the first Edus because we don't know if it's reliable. It's called an Edus Mukheshes, that's called Treyu Trey. Now, in order to really learn the sugya of Treyu Trey, you have to know Masechta Ksubas and also parts of Yevamos, but mostly Ksubas, because the question is, do we really completely undermine the first pair of Edus, first testimony, or maybe the testimony still stands? That has to do with what's called Sfeika d'Oraisa, Sfeika d'Rabbana. What do we do with Chazakas that existed before this Treyu Trey? Now we have something called Hazama. Hazama is fundamentally different. In Hazama, the second pair of Edim called them Hazimim. They don't know beans about whether Reuven killed Shimon. They don't have a clue. Not yay, not nay. But what they do know is that the first pair of Edim couldn't have possibly been at the scene of the crime at that time in order to testify about this so-called crime. The whole thing is a fabrication, because we know that they were with us. When I was a kid, we used to say in Chicago, I hope, Steve, you won't mind, but you know, Chicago is like the other side of the world for us. So how could you have said that you were on the 9th Avenue in New York City on the 1st of January when we were with you in Chicago on the 1st of January? You couldn't have possibly been in New York. And you know, this was at a period of time where it couldn't have been that you took a what was the name of that plane that they took out of use? The
Concorde.
The Concorde, is that what it was called?
Yeah.
The Concorde, you know, where you could fly within minutes, you know, across the Chicago. You know, since we spoke about the Chevra Kaddish, you know my famous joke about the Concorde plane? They called up the rabbi in New York to come and officiate at a funeral. Somebody had died in London. They needed the rabbi to officiate. So he took a Concorde plane. He had to get this fast as he could. By the time he got there, it was before the Patira. Before the guy actually passed away. Anyway, that was the joke he used to say. So now the Gemara quotes a machlokas between Abai and Rava. Eid Zomeh. Abai Omar Lumafreya Hu Nifsal. So let's understand. There are 3 days again. We'll call it Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. On Sunday, the first pair of Edim testified that we were there at 9th Avenue, New York, at such and such a time, and Reuven killed Shimon. That happens on Sunday. On Tuesday, another pair of Edim come in. They're called the Mazimim. They say, Imanu Ayisev, you couldn't have been there. You were with us in Chicago. In the meantime, on Monday, the same pair, the first pair of Edim, the Edim Zomimim, testified on a different case. So Abai says, we have to throw out that Edus. And that's called the Mafreya. We have to take a time machine, go back in time, and any testimony that these Edim gave subsequent to the original Edus, in which they claimed that they were at 9th Avenue, New York, and they saw such and such a crime, all those Edios have to be disqualified. And it's amazing because we're going to have to run around and figure out where the malv is, where the lov is, and we're going to have to extract the money and turn everything upside down, inside out, because of Afreyahu Nifsal. And that is the intuitive understanding of Eid Zomim. Why is the Eid possible, Rabosai? Is he possible because on Tuesday two Edom came in to say Manu Yisem? Or is he possible because of the false testimony that he gave on Sunday? What's the answer to that, Rabosai? The false testimony he gave on Sunday. Again, we're trying to defend Abai. Now, you want to defend Rav, I'll give you a chance afterwards. But let's understand Abai. Abai is saying that although we did not know on Sunday that they were Edim Zomim, we've only found out 2 days later, but nevertheless, in truth, they were Zomimim. Why? Because Lumafreo Nifsal, meaning that's when they perjured themselves, and that's when they violated the crime of Edus Sheker, and that passels them for Edus. We may not have known about it, but now that we know about it, we can't, like an ostrich, stick our head in the ground. We have to admit that we made a boo-boo here, but it's not our fault. Bezin's not at fault. We didn't have the second pair of Edus, but whenever they come in, then Lumafreo Nifsal.
But we won't go before Sunday.
No. That a person is kosher until the moment he became possible. A person steals something on Sunday, there's no problem with any testimony he gave before that Sunday. Even if we caught him, red-handed at 9 a.m. on Sunday, and he gave a testimony at 8:59 on that Sunday, 1 minute earlier, there's no question about the reliability of that testimony. But Chach, any testimony he gave past 9 a.m., when he in this case, he perjured himself, he became an aid apostle. We didn't know about it, but certainly he was an aid apostle. And that's the intuitive understanding of Abaye. Rav Amar Mikanu Lahabu Nifsa. Whoa. He's only apostle from Tuesday. He's only apostle after Beis Din accepts the second pair of Edim and hands down a verdict that the first pair of Edim are Zomimim. You know, I gave a case of Sunday and Tuesday. He gives a case of Nisan and Tishrei, 6 months apart. I don't know exactly, maybe he wants to dramatize it, but basically 6 months went by since the original Edus. And now, 6 months later, there was a Hazama procedure. And two Edom came and said, Imanu Ayisev, 6 months ago when you claim you were there at the scene of the crime. All the testimony that they gave in the last 6 months has to be overturned and disqualified. That's Abai. Comes along Rav and he says, no, Mikanu Lahabu Nifsal. All those testimonies that he gave between Nisan and Tishrei are all Edus Kshera. We're not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. It's all kosher as we paskined in the last 6 months, time and time again. From now on, from the moment of Hazama and onwards, any testimony that these original Edim Zomim give is false. So the Gemara says, Abai Omer L'Mafreya, let's analyze this machlokes. L'Mafreya Nifsal Me'id Na Di'asid, from the moment they gave the testimony back on Sunday or back on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, is Rasha, who a person who gave false testimony, is a Rasha. V'Torah Omra Al Toshes Yodcha Im Rasha Lios Eid Chamas. The Torah says that a Rasha is possibly Eidus. Again, it may take us 6 months until we finally clarify and establish with evidence through Hazama that the Eidim 6 months ago gave this Eidus Sheker, but once we know that they gave it a Sheker, then Al Toshes Yodcha Im Rasha. You're not allowed to accept the Eidus of a Rasha, and clearly they became Rishayim as a result of their false testimony. That was the Maisa Avera that generates a Psul Rasha. And Arabosa, I would tell you, in honesty, I think where the Gemara starts with Abaye here, because Abaye is very simple. But really what the Gemara is asking is, how do you make sense out of Rav? That's what I think is the underlying motif, so to speak, of this Gemara. Now there's a long discussion in the Rani, I'm not going to get into it, as to how this impacts on shtaros, because we're not sure exactly what's the moment of testimony in a shtar. Is it the moment that they sign the shtar? Is the moment that the malva got the shtar in his hands? Is it the moment that the malva produced the shtar in Bezdin? That shtaros is very complicated in this context of Eid Zomen, because we're not sure. What is the moment of time of the Eidus? You know, you sign on a document, that's not really Eidus, it's not in front of Bezdin. Okay, fine, that's a long run here in our sugya. Maybe it's for an inch here, but not for us. And now we get to the real tough one, and that's Rava. Rava Amar Mikan Ulahaba Hu Nifsal. What does that sound like to you, Rabosei, in the previous sugya that we spent a day on, and more than a day?
Achroza.
It sounds a lot like Achroza. It sounds like we need a procedural Bezdin in order to establish him as an Eid Posel. You're right, like we spoke about a Malva Beribis, who is Posel Min Rabbanon, and the Rabbanon are going to postpone that Psul for the sake of defending and protecting all the Lekuchas who use this Eid until it's public knowledge, until Achroza. So we could take Eidus, we saw in the case of Achroza, which is really not reliable. I mean, this guy is a Malva Beribis, which according to Rabbanan is Gezel, is equivalent to Gezel, and we can take his Eidus and we can rely on it. It's magical. And we saw already in the Muki Yosef yesterday that fundamentally he became possible at the moment of the Halva, and we're only going to institute this Halach of Achraz in order to protect, when it's necessary, the Lekuchos. In a case of Isa Beheta, for example, we're going to pass their Eidus because nobody's going to suffer any loss. So the Gemara gives two explanations for Rava. The first explanation is very, very tough. Let's see if we can figure it out. Says Rava, Zomem Chidushu. Now, what does the word chidush mean? Literally, it means it's some new idea. I would say chidush means it's antithetical to what I call human logic, to rational human logic. Why is it antithetical to human logic? So Rav spells it out for us. My chaz is the samchas ahani, smoch ahani. You've got Reuven and Shimon. And you got Levi and Yehuda. In the case of Akosha that we discussed earlier, we just throw up our hands because we don't know who's to be believed and who's telling who's lying. Here too, the first two Adam say we were at 9th Avenue on the 1st of January in the city of New York, and we were there. And the second Adam say, no, you're with us in Chicago. Go figure out who's telling the truth. Do we have any reason to believe Yehuda? And Levi and Yehuda more than Reuven and Shimon? But who's Levi and Yehuda? Maybe Levi and Yehuda are trying to defend and protect, well, let's say save the Nidon, who was accused of murder by testimony of the first Eidim. Or maybe they have an in against these Eidim. Because what's going to happen in a murder case, or in any capital case, what's going to happen to the Eidim Zomimim?
They're going to get the...
Correct, they'll be killed. So maybe the two Eidim who came afterwards are perjuring them. They're lying. Who knows who's telling the truth? Flip a coin. You have no more proof. And Rabbosai, if you want to dramatize Rava's kasha about Chidishu Maichazis, I will tell you the following. The first cut of Eidim had 1,000 members. The second cut of Eidim had 2 members. We're going to take the 1,000 members one by one and we're going to give them the guillotine. because the Torah says Imanu Ayisu. So the two Edom say about 1,000 people, you were all with us in a conference in Chicago. We had a major conference for the Museum of Art in Chicago, and then you were all there with us, one after the other. We're going to believe these two Edom against 1,000 Edom. My chazes. That's called a chiddush. Okay. I mean, Rav has certainly convinced me that Edom Zom is a chiddush. I have no clue, al pi svara, why the Torah says we prefer and we believe the second pair of Edom, we're going to kill the first pair of Edom. But so what? Now Rav says, formulates a principle. Ein lech abo, ela mishas chidusho v'elech. In other words, it's like dial it, sorry. It's like damage control. Yeah, we're really in a bracha. We really don't have any clue why the Torah says that the first pair of Edom are Zomim. But what we're going to do is we're going to limit the damage. We're going to say, okay, the Torah says we believe the second pair of Edom, but we're going to only believe the second pair of Edom from the time that they testified Imanu Ayisim against the first pair of Edom. From that moment on, that's when we believe the Edom. Rabbi, does that make any sense to you? What do you mean you believe the Edom from now on? They're testifying on something that took place 6 months ago. And the Torah says we believe them. And the first pair of Edom were not there at the scene of the crime in New York 6 months ago. They were in Chicago at that moment. So how can you tell me, Ein lecha bo ela mishas chidusho v'elech? Very, very strange. Now, there are two questions I'd like to raise here. One is, what does Abayi say about Ein lecha bo ela mishas chidusho v'elech? This seems to be some sort of principle that operates within the world of halacha, and Abayi is not impressed. Does that mean that Abayi holds that there's logical reason to believe the second pair of Edom against the first pair of Edom? Hayitochen? Could there be any logic? I challenge anyone here. If anyone here in the room wants to say that I understand logically why we should believe the second pair of Edom and not the first pair of Edom, I will tell him to pack his bags. There's no such thing. Certain things I can't tolerate. Sorry, I get very extreme. There's no way that you can justify. There's no way that you can tell me that we should believe Levi and Yehuda and not Reuben and Shimon. There's no logic to that. So what does Abai do with Ein lecha bo ela mishas chidusho v'elech? Did he not have that principle? This principle of Ein lecha bo ela mishas chidusho v'elech is a very important principle in halacha. I'll give you an example. Again, we're not going to go into this. It would take hours to figure this out. But there's something called kavua l'mafreya lo amrina, which means that if you have a suffix of kavua, which is called kavua kimech tzal mech sedomi, it only applies from the moment that we find out that it was kavua. But if we didn't know it was kavua, then we're going to apply what's called bitul berov. Why? Because the whole enterprise of kavua, the Gemara says, is a chiddush. We have no clue why kavua is kimech tzal mech sedomi. You went into one of 10 butcher shops. 9 of those butcher shops are kosher. 1 is treif. You don't know where you went into. So you tried to rack your brains. Did I go into a treifa butcher shop? Did I go into a kosher butcher shop? Well, 9 out of 10 chances, if you didn't know, you know, you were fanumet, as we say, you were preoccupied. You know, it's like you walk into a pole and you say, excuse me. Right? So here also, you were so confused, you didn't know which butcher shop you went into. This happens to me all the time when my wife asks me to go shopping. I have no clue where I went. You know, he says... So he comes out, so isn't there a 90% percentile statistical probability? So we say, no, kol kavua kemechtzal mechtzal, each chanus, each store is kavua, is set in its place, and therefore it's kemechtzal mechtzal, it's 50-50, there's no row. I mean, it makes no sense. So we say, ein lecha bo el mishas chidusho v'elech. And kavula mafreya lo amrinan, and if there were any sfeikas that took place yesterday, then we can rely on rov, but from now on, we're going to say kemechtzal mechtzal. So does Abai deny that principle? And question number 2 is, how do you explain that principle? In other words, if the Torah, if the Torah doesn't believe the second pair of Edom, why are we putting the first pair of Edom to death? And if the Torah believes the second pair of Edom, so we should believe him, my friend. No. We're going to say, Ein lecha bo ela mishas chidusho v'elech, mikan v'elech. And by the way, I am absolutely convinced that Rava is talking about a Doraisa halacha. The fact that all the alios that he gave before the Azom and Bezdin are acceptable, that's a Doraisa halacha, according to Rava. Then we have the second pshat in Rava. That's a whole different story. Ika de Amri, others say that Rava namika Abayis svirulei. Rava has to admit that Abayis is absolutely correct. Once the Torah declared that we believe the second pair of Edim is Lamafreya unifsal. But my time of Omar, what did Rava mean? Mikano lahabo unifsal? It's a rabbinic institution. Mishum pseida de lekuchos. We have to worry about someone who had to sell or buy a field that he needed a shtar, and he got these two witnesses to sign on a shtar. There was no reason, no germ of a hava, meaning that these witnesses are apostle, and therefore we're going to accept that edus. And this, by the way, is a precedent for what we saw in the Demuki Yosef, that you could have an aid who's not reliable. He's posliedus. He borrowed beribis. But yet we're going to rely on his testimony. Why? Because of pseida lekuchos. Call it hefker bezin hefker. I don't know, whatever you want to call it, that somehow we have the authority to accept edus from edim psulim. But Rav agrees to Abaye fundamentally, the edim zomim or edim psulim. So Rabosai, I would like to take a stab based on the Ramban to explain Abaye's way of thinking. Meaning, Lamafreyahu Nifsal. And according to the second Lishna in Rava, Rava also agrees Lamafreyahu Nifsal, except they made a takana mishum pseida lekuchas. What about the principle of Ein Lecha Bo El Mishas Chidush Avielich? What about the logic of Rava, my chazis, why do you believe the second pair of Edom more than the first pair of Edom? The Ramban, just a little history, the Ramban lived at a period of time where it was popular amongst the Rishonim to be Doresh Time of the Krah. Now, Time of the Krah is a very, very iffy, very speculative, even perhaps dangerous enterprise to try to come up with an explanation for the Torah law. The Rambam did it in his Moral and Avuchim, and he failed miserably. Mm-hmm. There's almost nothing in the Rambam's time, the mitzvahs that we accept today. You know, all the Rambam's explanations for not eating pig and for Shabbos and the whole nine yards, it's all been rejected. The Rambam in Mishnah Torah, the Rav used to say, actually changed his mind, because the Rambam in Mishnah Torah will say Gzeiras HaKos. Then the Rambam might say Remez Yeshu D'Dover. Sometimes the Rambam will give us a moral, ethical, inspirational drasha to take out of a mitzvah. But the Rambam will always tell you it's a Gzeiras HaKos. But Mor Nevuchim, for whatever reason, and the Mor Nevuchim was written in his later years, he attempted to give explanations for mitzvahs. In modern history, the one who sort of he turned the clock back to that period of time of Tamei Mitzvahs was Rav Shimshel Fol Hirsch. And he wrote a book called Chorev, in which he tries to explain mitzvahs. Rav Kook, who was the chief rabbi here in Palestine before the Kibbutz state, he also, to some extent, was involved in Tamei Mitzvahs. But I'm telling you right up front, you know, the way I was brought up, Tamei HaMitzvahs is not always a recommended path to walk on, because as soon as you give explanations and rational justifications, you get into deep trouble. And it's very hard, if you know the halacha well, to justify within the halachic universe any kind of explanation you gave, because every time you give an explanation for a mitzvah, I always have a kasha from a certain halach. In any event, the Ramban took it upon himself many times in his Pirush al Torah to give an explanation for the mitzvah. He has a long explanation for Yibum with Gilgulei Neshamas, and it's very difficult, mystical ideas. But here, in Edim Zomim, in Parshas Ki Teitzeh, the Ramban makes an attempt to understand why the Torah believes the second pair of Edim over the first pair of Edim. And before I present to you the Ramban, if you've never heard the Ramban, I want to give the following introduction. There are two systems of logic. There's human logic, what we call intuitive, rational logic, mathematical, scientific logic, and then there's halachic logic, which is a whole new system of logic. You have to know about Kal Vachomers, and you have to know how they work, and what's a pircha, and what's a tzad hashoveh. And it's a whole system of logic that's a self-contained system. The problem that we have today with our presentation of Torah is that people who aren't oriented, they don't understand the logic of the Torah, because in order to understand the logic of the Torah, you have to know the Torah, and you have to know it well. So they approach the Torah with the perspective of human logic. Okay, having said that, I can tell you many stories about this, but having said that, the Ramban says that there is a logic to why the Torah believes the second pair of it. Again, it's not human logic. It's not something you can, you know, you give a course in moral philosophy in the University of Maryland, nobody's going to, the professors there are going to laugh you out. But it's a halachic logic that applies within the system of halach. And the Ramban, in order to explain why the Torah believes the second pair of Adam, asks the following question as an introduction. What happens if two witnesses testify in a court of law and they say whatever they say, Reuven killed Shimon, whatever the testimony might be. Another pair of Adam come in and they testify about this Reuven and Shimon that they were gazlonim. That we know that a year ago, prior to this date of the testimony, they stole. They broke into a store and they stole. And what do the Edom say, the first pair of Edom? Lies, libels. They start yelling and screaming. What are you doing here? You're telling the whole thing is a made-up story. So the halacha says that we believe the second pair of Edom. Why? Because the first pair of Edom are on trial. The second pair of Edom know nothing about the original case in which about which the first pair of Edom testified, Reuven, did he kill Shimon, did he not? They don't know beans. All they know is that these two Edom stole, that they were gazlonim. That is what's called Edus Lifsol as Gufam Shala Edom. If the second pair of Edom want to talk about the story and the Maisa Shahoy, the Sipra Maisa, did Reuven kill Shimon or not, then we have the first pair of Edom who are contradicting them, and we don't know, and it's trey, and we're left in doubt. It's the gray area. We don't know who to believe. But if the second pair of Edom are testifying against the Gufam Shel Edom, and they're testifying that these Edom were guilty of theft, the Edom are not believed in the process, in the context of Edom, to contradict the second pair of Edom. Why? Because here they're Nogeya Bedover. They are no longer testifying about somebody else. Now they are on trial themselves. They are testifying on behalf of themselves. There's no testimony on behalf of yourself. We believe the second pair of Edom. We're going to establish now, based on their Edus, that the first pair of Edom are Gazlonim, they're Psulim, and when they testified subsequent to the Gzeil, again, you have to go through the timeline, that testimony is completely disqualified, null and void, and we're not going to assume that Reuven is guilty as accused in a murder case or whatever the case may be.
Assuming when Mafreya holds Nifso.
Correct. Everybody agrees on Mafreya holds Nifso. We're in the first Lishna of the Gemara. And not only that, we're talking about a Psul Doraisa. Again, a Gazlan is possible with Doraisa. We said over and over again that in a Psul Doraisa, for sure there's a din of Lamafreya Unifsa. The only reason Rava says Mikano Lahava Unifsa in the first approach is because of my chazis. We have no clue logically why the Torah believes the second pair of Edom, and then we apply the principle of Ein Lecha Bo'ol Mikhidusha V'Elech. But if we accept the Ramban, which I'm about to present to you, that there is a logical reason that is compelling as to why we believe the second pair of Edom, within the context of that Svara, again, as far as not human logic, but halachic logic, then we don't apply the principle of Ein Lecha Ela Michidusha V'Yelech, because it's not a Chidush, it's a Svara. Says the Ramban, I'll tell you why we believe the second pair of Edom. The first pair of Edom cannot defend themselves and say and contradict the second pair of Edom. We were in New York at that place at that time. Because now the Edom are on trial. Because when the two pair of Edom come in and they say, we know nothing about the case, what happened in New York on the 1st of January at 9 a.m. in 9th Avenue at such, we don't know anything. Garnished. We have no clue. But we know something about these two Edom. These two Edom are Edom that purged themselves. The whole story was fabricated. They made it up from A to Z. They were not there because they were with us in Chicago. At that moment in time, the first pair of Edom are on trial. And if they're on trial, they cannot contradict the first pair of Edom. Because anything they say to contradict those Edom is what we call Nogea Be'edus. They are now not Edom, but rather they are the Makayvim. They're the people on the platform. They're on stage. They're being judged now. Did they perjure themselves? Did they not? Says the Ramban, in such a case, the first pair of Edom could not be makhish. There's no hakhasha to the second pair of Edom. Hakhasha means when the two pairs of Edom are fighting back and forth, contradicting as far as the Sefer HaMaisa, did this story take place? Did it not? And then we have Trey, we don't know who to believe. But in the case of Edom Zomerman, we're not dealing with the case with the Sefer HaMaisa. We're not interested right now in the Sefer HaMaisa. Right now we want to know and check out the qualifications of the first pair of Edom. Were they upright people, or were they people who perjured themselves and they lied in this? In such a case, it's not trey to trey. It's equal to paslaninu begazlanuso. Basically, the second pair of Edom are saying that the first pair of Edom were gazlanim. Not literally gazlanim, obviously. They didn't steal anything, but they perjured themselves in a court of law. Brilliant, brilliant chiddush in the Ramban. Rav is not impressed. Rav still insists, my chazis. Says Rav, I don't need the first pair of Edom to defend themselves and contradict the second pair of Edom, because their testimony was already accepted. And their testimony has a status of what we call a chal shem edus, that they were there in New York at that time and at that place, because at that moment when they testified, they were believed to say where they were, because that's part of their edus. Their testimony is that we were there to see the crime. We've already accepted that edus. Once we accept that edus, when the second pair of edus say, Manu Ayisim, we have a trey situation. And there's no reason, says Rava, even within the logic of Halacha, to believe the second pair of edus, it's trey. And therefore it's chidush, and there's a gzeiras hakosav here that we can't explain, we can't justify it, and it's a different kind of halacha. It's not a svara halacha, it's a chidush halacha. And with regard to a chidush halacha, when we see something that al pi svara cannot be correct, is the rule is ein lecha bo el mishas chidush aver. Now, let's take the ein lecha bo mishas chidush aver lecha of Rav in the first lishna and try to formulate it. How does it work? And the answer is that the Torah says there's something called an Eid Zomem. Eid Zomem is a halachic status, what we would call a Chal Shem Begavra. He's an Eid Zomem. But an Eid Zomem only becomes an Eid Zomem from the moment that there's testimony against it. That's what Ein Lecha Bo El Mishas Chidush Aveilech means. Until you testify against him, he's not an Eid Zomim. And that status change between an Eid Kosher and Eid Zomim takes place at one specific moment in time when the Azoma took place. But it doesn't go Lamafreya, because you can't change the status of a person Lamafreya. So Abaye understands that Hazoma is a biru. Hazoma clarifies that the Edom 6 months ago perjured themselves, and therefore they were apostle from that time and on. Rava says no. On a level of clarification of biru, we have no svar, we have no logic to clarify that the Edom perjured themselves. There's no reason in the world why we should assume so. But the Torah is mechadish achidish that we rely on the second pair of Edom. We believe them. But what the Torah is saying, that there's no birur, and if there's no birur, we cannot say that with the first Edus and that Maisa Edus and that Agod, they became possible. They only become possible as a result of a halachic change. And halacha says that through the process of Imanu Ayisam and the testimony of the second pair of Eidim Azimim, these Eidim become Zomimim. And then we clamp them down with a new status, which is called Eid Zomim. But that status emerges only from the moment of the Hazoma. And it doesn't go to Mafreya.
Supported that is the, those are the three.
Asha, you actually sometimes support me. That's good.
There are three,
he usually gives me a hard time, which I appreciate.
There are three things that we that require hachraza in this Zakei Mamre and Ben Suramor and Edom Zomim. Those three require public, right? Those are the three. Those are the three that require a public announcement.
Hmm.
So maybe that's.
So it's interesting. I wonder what the nafkamid is in the case of Zaki Mamre. Do you have any nafkamid off the top of your head?
I think that all three are done because those they affect the basis of
society
in general,
justice.
I'm saying that those are that it's something that needs a public public recognition.
Right.
So maybe I'm saying that in support of that.
Again, I think, Ashi, the language that you use, your formulation, I think would be more appropriate for the second Lishna, the Ikad Diyam. We need a public announcement because otherwise, say the Lekuchos. In the first explanation, I'm not so comfortable with the word public because I don't think it has anything to do with public. I think it has to do with a process in Beis Din in which we create and generate a Shem Eid Zomim. And that process can only exist after the two Eidim come in front of Beis Din. They say Imanu Ayisam. I don't give no one. They used to ask if a tree falls and no one's there to hear it, whether there's a sound or not. Right? I don't care if there's no one there to hear it. I don't need a public nature. You can have a Beis Din that's clandestine, that's underground. But nevertheless, Beis Din accepts the two Eidim who say Imanu Ayisam. And at that point, the Torah says that the first pair of Eidim have a shame, have a status change. They become "quote unquote" Eidim Zomim. Joseph,
yeah, just to clarify, if somebody was nigzal in Nisan and only convicted in Tishrei, everybody agrees on that case,
right?
L'mafreya who nifsal.
Correct. In the case of Gazlonis, everybody agrees that l'mafreya who nifsal. So now the Gemara asks my Beinai. We have two explanations for Rava. Is there a nafkamina between these two explanations? Ika Beinayu, the Gemara says that the nafkamina is going to be in a case of Das Hidu Beitre Bechad. Inami de Paslinu Begazlinusa. So Joseph, your question really is on the second Lishna in Rava. I was spending my whole time on the first Lishna in Rava, but the Gemara is going to point out here the Inami, and then maybe on Sunday we'll go back to the first Nafkamina of Vasidu Beitre Bechad. But if you take a look at the Inami, the Paslinu Begazlinusa, that's what you were talking about before. What do I mean? You have the two Eidim who testified way back in Nisan, and now in Tishrei, the second pair of Eidim say that this first pair of Eidim were Gazlonim back in Nisan, Erev Nisan, right? Erev Rosh Chodesh Nisan. But in the meantime, during that 6-month period, these Gazlonim, if you will, have signed on different shtaros. According to Rava, we have to be very nervous in the second Lishna about Pseid Lekuchos. And therefore, to the same extent that in Eid Zomim we're going to say Mikano Lahabo, and if so, in the case of Pasolini Gazlusa, we're also going to apply the principle of Mikano Lahabo Nifsa.
So, and even though now it's a Doraisa Dekin, not like
even though it's a Doraisa. And that's what we're going to have to figure out, how to reconcile the previous Gemara with this Gemara. In other words, if we accept the hook, line, and sinker, this logic of Mishum Seder Lekuchos Mikanal Abu Nifsal, then what about the Gemara before? The Gemara says before that if he was a Gazlan Doraisa, then he's Pasul Mafreya. So maybe that sugya doesn't stim with this Lishna in Rav. Okay, Rabosai, I'll wish everyone a great Shabbos, and thank you very much. We didn't learn that much of the sugya, but this is such a gishma, it's such a heavy sugya. This Ramban is so.
I showed up late for the sugya, but if a Gazlan does tshuva, they're a Gazlan forever.
No, there's a whole process of chazor where we reinstate him as an eight kosher. Bob, can you do me a favor, just open up the door?
That's on, just...
That is on Chav Heyam and Aleph. Whole sugi of Chazorah. And it's going to be a machlokis whether after Chazorah, if we need another Hachrosa to reinstate him as an eight kosher. Because again, we're changing his status.